greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. A skeleton woman has appeared in London. Well, she hasn't appeared as in walking down the street. They found her. This story out of the London Telegraph today is somewhat telling. A woman's skeleton, this is a 40-year-old gal. A 40-year-old woman's skeleton was discovered in her apartment 3 years after she died. Just announced today. And this gal, this woman, I wish we could get a picture of her, a photograph of her as she appears today. Because she could be a poster child for liberalism. This is a perfect picture of government care. The government cares about you. The government will take care of you. Now, this is what liberals don't consider. Why not? Well, they don't care, but they don't consider this. To the extent that the government takes care of people, to that extent, their family will not. Their friends will not. Their neighbors will not. Their church will not. Because people are not stupid. So if the government comes along and some guy leaves his wife and two young kids, and the government says, well, it's hard to survive like that, so we'll help you out. We'll give you $300 a month in food, for example, food stamps, food credit cards. So we'll do that. So the church is not stupid. The neighbors are not stupid. They're not going to give her $300 a month in food when she's getting that from the government. And so her friends and family will not help her to the extent that the government helps her. So if the father-in-law, let's say, and the mother-in-law are helping to pay for the food for their grandchildren to eat every month, that's going to highly motivate them to go after that lousy, no-good son of theirs and say, you get back here and you take care of your kids. But when the government comes in and takes care of his kids, then it makes it easier for him to split. It lowers the threshold for families to fall apart, for friendships to be strained or disappear, for neighbors not to know one another, for people not to have to go to church, not to have to have friends on a spiritual plane. Because the government is here to help you. I remember reading, was it Philo or Josephus? I think it was Philo. Two first century Jewish historians / philosophers / theologians / political advocates of the Jews. And they mentioned way back in the history of mankind, the Babylonian Empire. Remember who built the Babylonian Empire? Nimrod. Nimrod. They mentioned him. And this is what Philo said. He said, Nimrod taught people to rely on the government instead of relying on God. And I read that and I thought, wow, the first liberal. Nimrod was the first liberal. That's socialism. Socialism teaches people to rely on the government. So this gal, she was relying on the government and then she died. And it turns out nobody knew. Nobody knew. She didn't have to be interacting with any human being because the government was there for her. This is the perfect picture of liberalism. A woman's skeleton was discovered in her apartment 3 years after she died. It emerged today. This is a report from the London Telegraph, April 13th, 2006. Joyce Vincent. See, she has a name. She was a real person. Joyce Vincent was surrounded by Christmas decorations, and the television was still on. Wow, they should put what model that was. Who's the manufacturer? That's a good TV, huh? The 40-year-old's body was so decomposed that the only way to identify her was to compare her teeth with a holiday photograph. Wow, that's a good photographer. Man. And bad teeth, obviously. Okay. Police believe she died of natural causes in early 2003, and she was only found this year when the Housing Association officials broke into her apartment at Wood Green in northeast London. They were hoping to recover the thousands of pounds of rent owed since her death. How's that one? So they wouldn't have found her for another 30 years if she had automatic withdrawal from her checking account. And if her Social Security checks were automatically deposited, she'd be a fossil by the time the Liberals found her. Let's see here. They're calling her Ms. Ms. Vincent had apparently been placed in this place as a women's refuge accommodation as a victim of domestic violence. Huh. So Joyce Vincent was considered a victim of domestic violence. She may have very well been. And so they put her in a domestic violence home for women, which is just another aspect of the government liberal institutionalizing of human beings. In America, a woman goes into a women's shelter, domestic violence shelter, run by lesbians. Don't challenge me on that one. It's true. It's like people used to say women's PGA, women's professional golf, it was all lesbians. And if you said it, you got in so much trouble. And today they say it. What do they call it? The Lesbian Professional Golf Association or something? Ladies? Oh, that's what that else. I thought it stood for lesbians. No, I'm only kidding. No, but they admit it. There, you know, so many are lesbians, but it used to be that was like a terrible accusation. Today, they brag about it. It's no big deal. It's no big deal until you find out about right and wrong and realize you've been destroying yourself and everyone around you. Then it's a big deal. The food in her apartment, Joyce Vincent, her food had expiration dates of February 2003. And she was found lying on her back on the floor of the living room, which was also her bedroom. And the coroner said he doesn't think anything is suspicious. It's not suspicious. This is just routine liberalism at work. It's not suspicious at all. So this gal, this skeleton gal, should be a poster child for government care. I just wish we could get a picture of her. Now, that would be sad, really. It'd be sad to get a picture of her. But maybe we could Photoshop a picture of her. Because no one would actually know, right? We could put Joyce Vincent, skeleton woman, poster child for government care. And it's all about relationships. It's all about relationships. And liberals, they have solutions to problems that are the equivalent of throwing gasoline on a burning building. That's what liberals do. And when you point out to them, when you say, you know, you guys have been trying this for 40 years and you spent trillions of dollars on it and it's completely backfired. They say, well, we just have to spend more. Okay. Hey, Denver Bible Church, Sunday morning. This Sunday is Resurrection Day. Are you preparing yourself? This Sunday is Easter, Resurrection Day. And in Colorado, we are going to do something so fun. Now, I don't think I should make a general invitation, should I? I guess if people call and they want to come, we are going to have a sunrise service on one of the hogbacks west of Denver, right on the top of the hogback, and it's going to be a blast. So you know what I'll do? I'll give out the Denver Bible Church phone number, and if anyone would like to, if you'd like to come along, you could call, and we'll tell you how to get there. In fact, it'd be good. We could email you the directions. And sunrise is at 6:22 a.m. Sunday. So we're going to meet 6 o'clock, and we're going to have a campfire, breakfast. It's going to be great. Worship the Lord. Watch the sunrise. The phone number for the church is 303-463-1707. That's Denver Bible Church. If you're driving, you can't remember the phone number, just go to the web, denverbiblechurch.org. denverbiblechurch.org, 303-463-1707. 463-1707. Yesterday, we did something we normally don't do. We played a sermon for the program, Bob and Yurt Live, on fighting the culture war with Daniel. That was from a few weeks ago. This Sunday, this past Sunday, the sermon was titled, If Christ Had Not Risen. And it's just so fascinating to think through how bad would it be for mankind if Christ had not risen, and it would be bad. It would be really bad. I mean, you're depressed right now? Huh. Imagine. We compared it to what would happen if on a Sunday morning, any morning, people got up early, walked along the beach, they're waiting for the sunrise, and they keep checking their watch. They're trying to see, what time is it? The sun should... I thought it was sunrise at 6:22. It's so dark, they can't even read their watch, so they take out their cell phone, push a button, battery comes on, look at the time, it's 6:24, and it's pitch dark. It's black. Why is it so black? The stars are like lasers burning into your eyes. The stars have never been so bright. And it's so eerie. You see a car driving down the road a ways, and its car lights seem to go on forever. And you think, why is it so dark? Where's the sun? Why is the sunrise late? What are my watches wrong? My cell phone's wrong? Everything's wrong? And you find out that there is no sunrise. The sun has disappeared. And it steadily gets colder. It gets colder and colder. Every hour or two, it's dropping a degree. Pretty soon, it's a couple hundred degrees below zero. And mankind is doomed, right? Well, that's nothing. If the sun did not rise, that's nothing. If the sun did not rise, that's nothing compared to if Christ did not rise. If God the Son did not rise, then the human race would be in for utter devastation. But he did rise. And so we'll celebrate his resurrection this Sunday morning in Denver, Denver Bible Church at 6 a.m. So call us if you want to come, 463-1707. That's 303-463-1707. We'll be right back.
You hypocrite. Are those the first words that Christ will say to you? Now that's a scary thought. But many Christians overlook the words that Jesus spoke, and they use a cliche instead. Hi, this is Brian Rohrbaugh on behalf of Bob Enyart Live. Is it possible to be nicer than God? What about meaner than God? Remember the words from a popular song? They will know we are Christians by our love. Many Christians who ignore what God calls sin think that they are being nice by not confronting a sinner. But is it really nice to withhold God's truth? To let someone think God approves of their behavior? Or is that meaner than God? Find out in the audio series Nicer Than God, a Bible study on the value of God's Word. I spoke in one part of this series. Find out what I have to say. Order Nicer Than God. It's a fun and timely series on biblical wisdom. Order yours today. Call 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And ask for Nicer Than God. Or order online at KGOV.com. Now get ready for Bob Enyart Live.
Back, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278. So the skeleton woman could be a poster child for government care. And then we have the sermon we did yesterday. If you're interested in talking about it, looking at the Bible and the story of Daniel and how Daniel was a governing official and what he did, what he elevated above all else. Above anything, he elevated stare decisis. That was it. That's what our government leaders are telling us, stare decisis. Our government leaders are telling us that not only our government leaders, our Christian leaders, that what you need to do is obey the process, because the process is the ultimate good that a judge must uphold. And if a judge upholds a law or a ruling that says you can murder the innocent, he's a good judge because he's not being a hypocrite. He's living by the principles of the Christian leaders in America. And that's what Daniel did, right, Daniel? The king said, don't pray for 30 days. Only pray to my statue. And Daniel said, I'm a governing official. Stare decisis. And so he obeyed, right? He refused to pray to the God of Abraham. That's not what he did. If he had done that, he would have been a loser. He'd go down in history as a loser. That's what would have happened. He wouldn't even made it into his own book. He'd have had to write about somebody else. But he obeyed God rather than man. And God loved Daniel and honored him and blessed his nation, his people, Israel, through Daniel's ministry. But today, we would never know if there were any Daniels in government because our spiritual leaders are telling them, you must obey man rather than God. You must obey man rather than God. And so any Daniels that there could be out there are being short-circuited and detoured toward humanism. It's real sad, but boy, that's it's easy to do. You just look at it. Look at the times in the Bible where people did right instead of doing what the government told them to do. And they are the heroes in the Word of God. All right, what else do we have? What other insane story is in the news other than the skeleton gal? Okay, this is a good one. This is from New York, Newsday. A public school bus driver has been charged for unlawful imprisonment of a 7-year-old girl. Now, this goes in the what's a liberal to do file. What's a liberal to do? The school bus driver was saying that this girl was out of control. So what's he supposed to do? He tied her up. I mean, liberals are often caught in this kind of circumstance where the ideas, the psychobabble that they're taught doesn't work. And the kids become miserable, absolutely miserable. We went to a local mall a couple days ago to meet with one of our advertisers. And since we're going to the mall, we brought my wife, my daughter-in-law, our three little kids. And we're going through the mall, and we see this girl throwing an absolute total fit temper tantrum against her mom. And the mom had completely no control over the girl. At one point, the girl threw herself to the floor. And you know the hard floors they'll have in stores and malls? I thought she might have been injured. Just slammed her body against the ground. Even I thought she hit her head. And she was screaming so loud, you couldn't tell if she was screaming from dying or just screaming out of lack of control. And so what's a liberal to do? And they say, well, reason with your 6-year-old terrorist. Reason? What's the difference between a liberal's kid and a terrorist? Well, the difference is you could negotiate with a terrorist. That's the difference. Now, you shouldn't. You shouldn't negotiate with a terrorist, but it is theoretically plausible. It's possible. So I remember reporting on stories like this where there were elementary schools. I remember one school, I think it was in Chicagoland, in Illinois, somewhere in the Chicago area, and they built these little incarceration rooms for the kids. And when the kid was bad, they'd put him in timeout in this little cell, literally. That was back in the mid-90s. And that's what prison is, right? Prison is a bad idea. Prison is timeout for adults. Doesn't work for kids, doesn't work for adults. They go into jail and they come out worse. So this driver, Edwidge Jean, I wonder if that's backwards. I wonder if it's supposed to be Jean Edwidge. Nowadays, there's no way of knowing. It used to be people named their kids Jim, Sam, Mary, Bob. Right? Easy names. Names that are the same forward or backward. Today, people name their kids like Honkenstoppel Fritzenbacher. You have no idea what in the world. You don't know if it's a boy or a girl. You never heard it before. You don't even know if it's a name. And some of them are the cutest names in the world, and that's fun. But nobody's going to be able to remember your kid's name. Just know that. When you come up with a really an imaginative, creative, really cute, fun name, it'll be you and your kid. No one else will know the name. There's a reason names came to be the way they are, where there's popular names. It's because when you meet people, how many people do you meet in your life? I meet thousands. And so when you meet, if you meet hundreds, and they all have a certain set of names, there's like 400 common names that you've come to know. Now you meet 3 or 4 young kids, and you've never heard of any of their names. It's almost impossible to remember their names. But our culture, you know, doesn't know things like this. And so people name their kids Twinkie, Thumpin, Dinky, Monger, Ringin, and you don't even know how to pronounce it. Hi, little Rinkin, Ninkin, Knockin, and Snuckin. So people just, now they just grunt. They just say, hi, kid, get out of here. Go play in traffic. So anyway, this bus driver, this alleged human being, Edwidge Jean. Now, since Jean is the last name, I don't know if it's a male or a female, because I can't identify Edwidge. I can't. But the driver, 52 years old, of Brooklyn, restrained the 7-year-old girl on April 4th, just 9 days ago, because she was acting up on the bus. And so the school district and the district attorney are just slamming this guy, that or this woman, or whatever it is. They're just slamming the bus driver for being the epitome of evil. And they said, this defendant cruelly put this youngster in jeopardy and endangered her well-being. I don't know, these mobile prisons, these yellow, orange-colored mobile public school buses, they don't have seatbelts anyway. I mean, you want to talk about dangerous. Kids hanging out the window sometimes. And I won't even recollect things that I remember happening in school buses when I was young. I'm not even going to repeat that. Because your kid would probably be safer on Times Square at 3 a.m. on a Friday night than in a school bus. But anyway, so they're charging this guy with, you know, pretty much everything, crimes against humanity. And they said this is what he did. According to the district attorney, Jean, allegedly, so it must be the last name, right? Jean. So Edwidge is the first name. I still don't know if it's a guy or a woman. So according to the DA, Edwidge strapped the girl down to a seat by taking two seat belts and tying them tightly across her body. It sounds like what the stewardess tells you to do when you get on an airplane. Take your seat belt, strap it across your body tightly. I thought that's what a seat belt was supposed to do. Preventing her from leaving the seat. Well, that doesn't sound criminal. Oh, wait, the story doesn't end there. Let me see. It's too long for such a silly story. Oh, here we go. Then he allegedly taped her hands together at the wrist by crossing her hands and wrapping them with electrical tape. Okay, now that's out of control. That's a little overboard, and it's a lot overboard. What's a liberal to do? What is a liberal to do? I remember some woman calling into the show and saying that it's wrong to spank your kids. And we have the most beautiful kids in all the circle that I know, the homeschool, conservative Christian community. Kids are so pleasant. They're fun to be with. They're respectful. They're creative. They have leadership skills. They're just really neat kids. The grandparents enjoy having them around. And some lady called in and said, well, it's cruel to spank your children. I said, I know, isn't it horrible to make them so pleasant? And she said, no, it's cruel. And I say, okay, what do? You have kids? You have kids. Do they ever throw temper tantrums? Yeah, of course they do. I said, you say, of course. Our kids don't throw temper tantrums. I mean, you could be good parents and your kids get messed up, or good kids who turn out real well might have some really bad days or episodes. But as a general rule, children don't throw temper tantrums when they're raised by good parents who have wisdom. And people say today, well, Sally is such a good girl, but that's only because we changed the definition of the words. Because if we were speaking of the same girl back in the 40s, they would have said, Sally is such a brat. They would have said, Sally is such a brat. She's the worst kid in the neighborhood. But today they say Sally's such a good kid, because good kid means brat. And she's a good kid when you give her ice cream, if it's the flavor she approves of. Then she's a good kid for the duration of that. And you don't rate yourself. A lot of liberal parents rate themselves on how do they do and how are their kids when they have their kids, say, at an amusement park or at the beach. When they're giving the kids the maximum of what the kid wants, and then they think, Well, that's what kind of a parent I am because my kid is nice. Except that if you follow around a family at an amusement park, you'll see the kid being a total miserable brat even at the amusement park where they got everything they could possibly want, but they're unhappy with themselves because they don't have boundaries. They don't have boundaries. And the parents have been taught, you know, when people teach that good is evil and evil is good, the parents have been taught that don't spank and being weak and lacking wisdom, and they want their kiddies to like them. And if I spanked my child, he might not like me. And so they ruin their children for selfishly trying to gratify their own emotional needs. Rather than risk a few minutes of your child not thinking you are the greatest person in the universe, right? When a child's getting spanked, at that very moment, he's probably not gushing with love toward a parent. But then within minutes, the child is resolved the situation. They feel the guilt that they should feel. They know that they did wrong by disrespecting or by hurting another child or by having a bad attitude. And it's resolved, and they go on with their pleasant day as part of a pleasant childhood. Let's take a break. We'll have a little bit more time after this break, and you could call in if you'd like, 800-810-YARD. That's 1-800-836-9278.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. Vineyard here. Hope you're enjoying the program as we talk about the news and we look at it from a biblical perspective. The Bible should inform our understanding of current events, law, history, science, human relations, marriage, government. You name it, God is the one who created the universe and he wrote a book. And so as you read his book, it's like reading the manufacturer's manual instructions. You buy a car, you read the owner's manual. The owner's manual says, change the oil once in a while, you'll be glad you did. So an ignorant person would say, oh, what do they know? They made the car, big deal, it's my car, I'll do what I want. And they don't change the oil, and eventually their engine becomes just some molten pile of metal. So God made us, which says that he's a lot smarter than we are because we can't make a worm. We don't know how to make anything living. We can make nothing living. Even when we totally decode the DNA of the simplest little bug, we don't know how to make one. Even if we could totally assemble the amino acids to a perfect double helix, here's the DNA chain that creates this life, we don't know how to make it. Because then you have a DNA chain. Big deal. What is that? Take a dead bug and you have billions of DNA chains of that bug. Now make it alive. Hard to do. evolutionists, liberals, evolutionists, they're the people who believe that cows evolved from fish and whales evolved from cows. Okay? You can't get more silly than that. They believe that cows evolved from fish and whales evolved from cows. Just imagine that happening. Just imagine the cows who dared enter the seas. Why? Because they wanted to swim. I see cows swimming all the time myself. They wanted to swim, and they swam for hundreds of thousands of years until they began to develop the ability to stay underwater for long periods of time. You see, they had cow schools, and it taught them how to do these things. So that's what you got to do to be a liberal. You got to believe this kind of thing. And liberals believe, well, if only you have the right kind of elements together, all at the same time and in the same place, then it'll just come to life. There it is, life. And does that work? Is that true? No, we know it's not true. How do we know? The law of abiogenesis. Life comes from life. And when an animal dies, you got a corpse and it's rotting. You have trillions of all the right elements in a perfect juxtaposition. There they are. It's all there. All the amino acids you could ever want to have life just pop into existence. And it doesn't. So, boy, liberals. To be a liberal, you have to commit intellectual suicide to be a liberal. Intellectual suicide. All right, now. You've heard in the news about the Gospel of Judas, right? We've talked about the skeleton girl, the skeleton poster girl for government care. We've talked about the sermon at Denver Bible Church, If Christ Had Not Risen, leading up to our sunrise service this week. And we talked about the school bus driver in Brooklyn who tied a 7-year-old girl up to her seat because what's a liberal to do? So we've talked about that. Now the Gospel of Judas. This purports to be the story of Jesus from Judas' perspective. It's a lie. It's not true. But, of course, people can make up stories, and they do. They make up stories about Jesus, the gospel of Philip, the gospel of whoever. Anybody ever mentioned in a Bible, there's a gospel by them. Gospel of Thomas, the gospel of Demas. Gospel of Agabus? Sure. Gospel of Agabus. Gospel of everybody. You could write your own. The Gospel of Mickey Mouse. So people could write stories that present their point of view, like the Da Vinci Code. It doesn't mean it's true, but they have an axe to grind. They want to undermine Christianity. They want to undermine Jesus Christ and his influence in the world. So they write books, and here's the Gospel of Judas, which depicts Judas Iscariot not as the betrayer, but as Jesus' favorite disciple. Okay, so that's not true, but that's how it's presented. Now, by the way, why would we believe that the Bible is true if people write books and they make them say whatever they want? Make up any story you want. Aliens came, abducted you. Right? Anything. One time there was a show on in Denver, another talk station, and they were asking for calls about aliens. And I called in and said I never believed in alien abductions until thanks to my cousin. My cousin lives in Brighton, Colorado, and the experience was so extraordinary, and now, of course, I believe. And they said, why? What persuaded you? I said, well, he would call me up and say, come on, he needs help feeding these things. And so I would go up to Brighton and we'd have to feed them. You know, he had them in his basement. So I guess, he had abducted a few aliens and we were feeding them, you know, shredded wheat they seemed to enjoy. And so the talk show hosts, they loved my call and they thought, see, here's another example, alien abductions. And then they realized I meant that we had abducted the aliens. And then they thought, oh, that's not true. Why not? You believe everything else, you nutcases. So anyway, somebody writes a book and they write anything they want in the book. Well, when you read the Bible, It has inherent proofs, indications that it is true. And it's filled with the flavor of realism. Now, the proofs in the Bible are the prophecies that cover centuries looking forward to Jesus Christ. And those prophecies were fulfilled in Christ, and they weren't looking forward to his wonderful friend Judas Iscariot. So the prophecies, the scientific statements made in the Bible that were beyond the ability of the original writers to even have an inkling of what they were writing about. But then also, there is the flavor of realism throughout. The Bible was written by the Jews. And do the Jews look good in the story or bad? Really, really bad. You couldn't hardly get worse. How about the heroes, the Jewish heroes in the Bible? They were great, weren't they? They were a nightmare for the most part. A nightmare. And then the apostles, they came along and they said, hey, let's write the Gospels so they'll still talk about us when we die. So they write the Gospels and they make themselves look like blithering idiots. If you're going to make up a story, make yourself look good. So that Bible is filled with evidence inherent to the Bible, how it accurately documents the history of the human race, the history of the world we live in, and the prophecies that became a part of the history and culture of mankind and that were fulfilled in Jesus Christ. And some still to be fulfilled in the last days. So the Bible has enormous credibility. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is one of the most well-established events in history. Then compared to that, you have the Gospel of Judas, which is just the make-believe story. And National Geographic, they've paid $1 million to $2 million in payments and deals to the gal, a shady character gal who's got this manuscript, and they bought the rights to the story and all, and they love it, right? Because it's against Jesus and Christianity. And so the New York Times today writes this expose of the story of this, the Gospel of Judas, and how it's shady dealings. Not that it's not historically real, that it's about 1700 years old or so, but just that it's all shady how the National Geographic Society ended up with it. And they're always jerks anyway, aren't they? National Geographic Society, total liberals. And they, what have they done? They've basically raped the indigenous peoples of the world by going all over the globe and stealing their heritage, robbing the wealth that they would have in their antiquities. And the National Geographic Society comes, here's a bunch of ignorant natives. We're going to take this stuff. We know it's worth millions, tens of millions of dollars, priceless. But what do they know? So we'll take this stuff. And they've stolen antiquities that belong to entire cultures and nations and peoples. Now, actually, in reality, that's a bit of a liberal slant on what happened. But they're liberal. And so you could hold them to their own standard. So the National Pornographic Society, they want you to pay a lot of money for their magazines and all. What did I say? National Geographic. I didn't say that. I said something else. All right. Well, I don't remember. I'll have to listen to the tape. Okay. So that's Gospel of Judas. And now what else? Oh, in New Orleans. What a good example of why democracy is dangerous. Okay, in democracy, you could go to war. You could be at war for the life of the nation, and you'll have the opposing party fighting to undermine the war effort. That doesn't mean that that's their true position. They're only trying to undermine the other party. So you have Bill Clinton. He went to war in Kosovo. He didn't get any UN resolution. He just went to war. He didn't have the whole world, the UN, telling him, okay, you're authorized to do this. And the liberals didn't care, the Democrats, because it was a Democrat doing it for the most part. And so now, because there's a Republican in Iraq, and it's not going as well as we would want it to go, then they're all against it. Not because it's reasonable to be against it, but because it's a democracy and they want political power. And so they have to oppose the party that's in power. So that's it. That's a primary motivating factor. And issue after issue after issue, you have Republicans taking fits about things that they would approve of if a Republican had done them. That's in the news every day. Every day. So now in New Orleans, their mayoral campaign down there for the new mayor of New Orleans, and in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, with all the flooding and the levees failed, and so local officials have been thinking that the new building code zoning for New Orleans, that they would not get any federal money to build homes unless the homes were raised up 10 feet. 10 feet. And that costs a lot of money. So, you know, they're waiting to see what would the federal government say. What would the new zoning be as to the elevation of the homes? And they're figuring it's going to be 10 feet because of how high the floodwaters went when the levees failed, 10 feet. And that's real expensive. And then some neighborhoods, you might as well not even build them. Well, because of democracy, and you need to convince the majority that they should vote for you, you don't say what's right or what's true or what's wise. You say what will get you elected. That's democracy. And so we have in New Orleans this mayoral campaign where not a single mayoral candidate would say that, well, certain neighborhoods should not be rebuilt. They wouldn't say that. That was taboo. You could not say that. So that's the political climate down in New Orleans. And the Republican Party is a political animal. And so we have the Bush administration, and they're the ones that are going to issue the guidelines for rebuilding homes in the flood-damaged parts of New Orleans and whether or not they would qualify for federal funds. And so they got to issue these new guidelines. And it turns out, lo and behold, reported today, that the federal government has issued unexpectedly lenient guidelines for building homes in New Orleans. They don't have to be 10 feet up so that they would be protected and people wouldn't die from the floodwaters. They have to be 3 feet up. 3 feet up. So if the levees fail, then your home will still be destroyed. But it'll be 3 feet better off than it would have been after Katrina. So the question is this. Did the Bush administration render a reasonably safe building code when they issued that 3 feet? Or were they simply thinking about the political realities of trying to get Republicans in New Orleans, in the state? Was that their concern? And they knew that it was a political taboo to say you have to raise up the homes to a safe level of 10 feet. All right. Now, there's no way to know. There is no way to know. There's no way to know. Like, is the Bush administration saying this because it really is the wise and safe thing to do? Or are they saying it because of the political considerations? There's no way to know. There's no way to know. There is no way to know. Because of our form of government. Even when it comes to the president talking to us about Iraq, or now Iran, for example, and Iran having nuclear weapons, a hope of building nuclear weapons. And so how do we know? What kind of trust can we have in our government when our government is looking back and saying, well, we did this and we did this and here's why? Well, there's billions of dollars of influence and thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people who are looking for a political opportunity to attack the party in power or the opposing party. So that party is so guarded that they're not going to be truthful if a lie will put them in a better political position. So democracy, you ever hear about office politics? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Office politics. Bad. How about family politics? Good or bad? Bad. How about church politics? Ooh, people shudder when they hear that. Church politics. It's all bad because it's people lording it over one another, trying to control others. One of the worst human traits is being a control freak. That's one of the things I have to fight against, being a control freak. And so politics turns the most capable people in the country into full-time control freaks, where they try to gain control over others. So who knows? So the Bush administration says in New Orleans, all right, you people, you want money from us to build your homes, which right there is immoral, but there's no way the Bush administration knows that because they're Republicans. So that's immoral, but they say, okay, you want money from the federal government? We'll give it to you. Just build your homes 3 feet above the levees, and we'll assume that the levees are going to hold. All right? You can take your Chevy to the levee next time there's a hurricane and sit up there and just hope that it holds. And as long as you're 3 feet above where you were, then we'll give you money. Okay. Now, one of the hurricane victims, a couple, ended up in a trailer, a federally owned trailer. Now, this has happened to countless thousands of people, right? The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, they bought thousands upon thousands of trailers, tens of thousands. There are thousands of trailers sitting in fields, stuck in the mud. Oh, it's just bizarre. But there are also many people living in these trailers. And so there's a couple who they lost their home in Hurricane Katrina, and they're living in this FEMA trailer, and the trailer burst into flames. And in fact, this happened recently in January. Another FEMA trailer burst into flames and blew up. And this one appears to have blown up because propane gas, you know, they're heated by propane, seeped into the trailer. And the guy lights a cigarette and it blew up. And Linda Meyer, the wife, she said that her and her husband escaped through a portion of the trailer that was blown off by the explosion. This happened yesterday morning. So that's another good picture. We're from the federal government and we're here to help. In fact, we have these specially designed trailers for your comfort and security. When they burst into flames, they fall apart. When they blow up, they come apart and you can escape. And people think, oh, that's a pretty good deal. I like that kind of trailer. See, the federal government is involved with so much that it can't do what it's supposed to do properly. If you have a corporation that does everything, pretty soon the things it did well, it will no longer even remember how to do. And so when the federal government, liberalism, says that corporations are evil, unless they're so big they become the government, then they're righteous. And the government is good, and the government has power over people to force them to give money and to control them. And so liberals think corporations are evil except the government, which is good. And so therefore the government should do everything, be involved with your life from the cradle to the grave. And when the government begins to do everything, you know what happens? It begins to fail at everything because you can't do everything well. And so I always thought it was quite a picture of what's wrong with our government system when George W. Bush, while America was being attacked, and I'm not criticizing him for his response was great initially, immediately, but what he was doing was a symbolic of what's wrong with our form of government. He's in a fourth grade classroom in a reading lesson. Now, why would the president of a country be giving a reading lesson to fourth grade kiddies? Why? Well, it's because Our government is in charge of raising children. That's our government. Health and Human Services, the Department of Education, they educate your little kiddies. And the more liberal influence there is, and the more tens of billions of dollars Republican presidents spend on these kind of government programs, the more and more the kids are in the hands of these institutions from younger and younger ages. So you got little tiny kids going into some government program. And it's the government's job to take care of preschoolers and little kids and kindergarten kids and second graders. So, of course, the president has to be there because it's his job to train little kids. He could say, it's not my job, but then he'll be voted out. It is his job in our current system, but it shouldn't be. The government has two just functions authorized by God: to prevent and fight against crime, to run a criminal justice system, including against foreign invading armies and the such and terrorists. That's one function, to uphold criminal justice, and two, to provide infrastructure like roads and bridges and harbors and waterways that only a centralized authority can manage. Those are the two functions of government that God has authorized. And when the government does other things, like gives farmers money for not growing crops, that's not the role of the government. The government takes billions of dollars from us, and it gives it to wealthy farmers, major corporations, for not growing crops. Now, how's that? Why do they do that? They try to control the price of farm goods, dairy products, so that we're not as able to feed the starving third world because the products are more expensive. That makes total sense, right? Yeah, when the government tries to manage the economy, then the government wants to control prices, and they want prices to be higher, not lower. They want them to be higher, so they pay farmers not to grow, so there's less food and higher prices. So when you go to King Soopers, then you pay more. And when you're a Democrat or a liberal, you pay more and you get mad and you vote for the people who want you to pay more. You see, it doesn't work. Human beings are not smart enough for democracy. Now, maybe democracy could work among the angels in heaven. I would assume they're smart enough, but because they're that smart, they would be against it. They'd be against democracy in heaven. And the same thing with the Southern Baptist. They get together at their convention and they vote on things like, they vote on homosexuality. They vote on abortion. Why don't they vote on murder? Why don't you vote on that? Why don't you vote on stealing? I mean, God did not say, hey, I want you guys every couple years to vote on murder. When they get to heaven, God's going to say, where did you get the idea I wanted you to vote on this stuff anyway? As soon as you start voting on something, you're eventually going to vote the wrong way. So we got to really get our thinking straight, huh? This is Bob Enyart inviting you to tune in tomorrow. God bless you.